Welcome back, everyone. This is Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening to Coffee Talk 3.0 here on TalkingAlternative.com. And I'm here with my buddy Sam, as usual, and my buddy Nick, and we are killing life, as we just had a five-minute conversation about a minute ago. Dude, huge things this week, man. This is why I love my life. I would not trade my life for anyone else's life, okay? I loved coaching. It was a great career, et cetera, except for the, you know, the sudden end to it. but I would never go back. I would never go back because I love what I do now. Being an actor and a writer and being on the radio, this is so exciting. It's so dynamic. Everything's always changing. You know what I mean? And this week has been a perfect example of that. It's been a crazy week, and I'm going to go through a lot of things here over the course of the episode today. But a few shout outs here, like I do every week. Just a couple of people that are helping make this all possible. Obviously, S&G Limousine out on Long Island. Listen, if you're flying in into or out of JFK, Newark, LaGuardia, MacArthur, which is like flying out of your living room out on Long Island, you need to call S&G Limousine. Or if you're just traveling into the city for whatever reasons, 516-833-6455. Tell them you heard it on Coffee Talk. Ask for Kevin, you know, because that's my part-time job too, man. And they'll give you $10 off on your next trip. Speaking of my job, I ran into a dude this morning. I did one job this morning. It was an early gig out in Dix Hills. Which out in eastern Long Island, well, it's central Long Island, I guess, compared to being all the way out to, you know, Riverhead. Picked him up, took him to JFK, and it was a young guy. He was like 24. And I told him I wouldn't use his name. I was going to give him a shout. His name is Jordan, okay? So I take this kid, Jordan, to the airport this morning, and he's talking about how much he hates his job. You know, he hates his job. He's straight out of college. He went away to college. He majored in accounting. He's not a CPA yet, but he's working for an accountant. Before you can get your CPA, you have to have at least 1 year of experience working in an accounting firm. I didn't know that. And I guess most people do 2 years. I didn't know that either. So he's telling me that he's counting down the days to when the 1 year is up, and he doesn't know if he wants to continue doing it. He wants to become a CPA, so it's a backup. And so we had this great conversation today about just doing, living, taking a chance. And actually, his parents are probably going to hate me for this, but my advice to him was, let me tell you something. I'm 44 years old, and at my age, I have a lot of friends that did exactly what this young guy is doing. They did what everyone told him that he should do. And deep down, a lot of friends, they didn't want to do that. But they did it anyway because they felt obligated to do it, you know? And, you know, obviously there are things that we need to do in life that we're obligated to do. You're obligated to pay your taxes. You know, you're obligated to not break the law, things like this. But other than that, we really can cut our own path. It's just a matter of taking the chance to do it. And a lot of people, I'd say most people don't necessarily cut their own path. They conform their lives into what everybody tells them that they should be doing. And so I was telling him about my life. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where, like, the way that I've always lived my life, even becoming a coach, I decided one day I'm going to become a coach. That was it. Because I had a great college coach, Ed Kuziak at the University of Vermont. We called him Kuz. Great guy. And I wanted to be like him. And when I first went to college, I wanted to be a physicist. That's what I actually went to college for. Wanted to be a physicist and loved math. You know, I got something, I want to say like a 710 on my math portion of the SAT, back on the old test, you know what I mean? So I was a bit of a math geek, you know what I mean? And I realized within about three classes in college that that's not what I wanted to do because it seemed like everybody knew what the professor was talking about, and I was the only one that didn't. That's what I felt. And I'm somebody who's good at math, you know? So I just decided one day, hey, I think I'm going to be a coach one day. And then I just did, you know? And same thing with when coaching ended. And I just had to make a decision. One day I said, you know, I think I'm going to become an actor. And then I just did, you know? And so I told the kid, I'm like, hey, man, life is too short. You may think that you got your whole life ahead of you, but let me tell you something. from the time I was 24 to the time now when I'm 44, like that. That's how quickly that happened, you know. And I'm so happy that I made the decisions that I did over the course of my life, even the bad decisions. You know, the bad decisions that led to the end of my coaching career, although they're regrettable, I don't regret everything happening because it's my life, you know, and I wouldn't be where I am now if those things hadn't happened. So I told him I was going to give a shout out, man. Dude, cut your own path, brother. He said he was going to listen to the podcast, so cut your own path, man. Couple other things. Veterans Day tomorrow, so I do want to give a shout out to two people, okay? One posthumously. A of all, my dad. My dad is a veteran. My dad actually earned two Purple Hearts, okay? I consider myself, I think most people that know me consider me to be a pretty tough guy. I'm a pretty tough guy. I'm a tough guy because my dad's a tough guy, okay? And so I want to send a shout out to my dad, Dan Hadsel, and I love him, and I'm actually going home tonight. I'm going to go visit them tonight for, we're going to have a little dinner, a little celebration. So, and then also to my grandpa, Michael Barbaro, which is the genesis of my professional name, Kevin Michael Barbaro. It's after my grandfather, actually, and who was also a veteran. And when I was a kid, okay, because my mom got divorced and she got remarried, and we actually lived with my grandfather for formidable years where you're forming your first actual memories. You know, when you can look, when now as an adult, I can think back as far as I can, thinking back as far as I can, and those memories are with my grandpa. So I wanted to be like him so much that actually in the kindergarten, I have my kindergarten photo, man, and I'm rocking, and of course, this is 1975, okay, but I'm not rocking a 1975 hairdo. You know what I'm rocking? I'm rocking a 75-year-old man's hairdo. I'm rocking the comb-over, baby, because my grandfather was going, and so he used hair tonic, which, does that even exist? I don't even know if that exists anymore, but I every morning, I made my mother put hair tonic in my hair and comb my hair over. And now I actually have a cowlick. You know what I mean? A cowlick, you know? And I think it's because I spent years of putting hair tonic in my hair trying to look like my grandfather, you know? And he was a tough guy. He's a unique dude. I know I'm going off on these tangents, but a very interesting story. My grandfather grew up in Olean, New York. Now, we're Italian. Olean, New York is basically about halfway between Chicago and New York, and it was kind of called like Little Chicago, okay? Matter of fact, Al Capone had a family kind of vacation area in that county, Cattaraugus County, you know, kind of off the beaten path because it was halfway between Chicago and New York, okay? This predates Interstate 80, okay? This is back when you had to actually take like what the Lincoln Highway, basically, you had to go across. So anyway, it's World War II. Okay, my grandfather ran the armory in Olean, New York, which is for the National Guard. Okay, he was the commanding officer of the National Guard. He ran the armory. The number one employer in during World War II in Olean, New York, was Pepsi Cola. It was a Pepsi plant. Okay, and growing up as a kid, we kind of like lived at my grandfather's house, basically on the property of the Pepsi-Cola plant. And I always kind of thought that that was kind of odd. You know what I mean? That we kind of, it almost seemed as though we lived on it because you walked right down the hill and it was Pepsi-Cola. Well, okay. Being Italian, all right, this is how things work, okay? What happened was there was a sugar embargo during World War II, okay? There were certain things that were rationed to civilians because they were needed for wartime, okay? Sugar being one of them. Now, Pepsi-Cola can't exist without sugar, okay? The number one employer in this town can't exist unless there's enough sugar that gets there. So, you can kind of fill in the blanks. Pepsi-Cola stayed open in that town during World War II. They somehow were able to get enough sugar to stay afloat. Fast forward to my childhood where we seemingly lived on the property of Pepsi-Cola, and my grandfather at any time could walk down the hill, walk in, grab a case of Pepsi, wave hello to people and walk out. So you can kind of fill in the blanks from there, brother. And so anyway, nice little veteran shout out to my dad and to my grandfather. And so anyway, the rest of the show today, dude, I wanted to talk about a couple of things. A of all, remember a couple of weeks ago I said that I would try to do the question in the beginning. Okay, so I'm going to do that now, and then we'll go to commercial, and then we'll come back. The question comes from a guy named Clayton D., all right? His last initial is D. Clayton D. So Clayton is from Ithaca, New York. Hit me up by email. Said, great show, love it, it's inspirational, et cetera, et cetera. He told me that he has an opportunity potentially to be on a reality show with MTV, okay? And do I think that that's a good idea? He wants to really be an actor. You know, he's studying acting. He's got a great acting teacher whom I know, and Eliza Van Court, who his acting teacher, I actually know, and I know Clayton. We actually co-starred together in an hour-long episode of True Crimes with Aphrodite Jones. It's the season premiere of season 5 that hasn't aired yet. And Eliza Van Court, his acting teacher, acting coach, actually was my co-star for Family Business. She played my wife, my ex-wife. Anyway, should I do it? Here's my advice on that. Because I think that there are people out there that wonder, you know, should I go that route if I want to become famous? This is my advice. If you want to become infamous, do it. You want to become famous and taken seriously, I don't think you should do it. Because what's going to end up happening is that people will just assume, even if you are a good actor, particularly initially, if you do end up being on this reality show, people are going to assume that the only reason you're landing any parts whatsoever is because you're famous for being famous, not because you're a legitimate actor. And you don't want that stigma. I don't think that it's worth it. I don't really think that's going to actually help out your acting career to go the reality show route, because you still have to audition. Okay, you still have to be able to act. You still have to be able to be believable and conversational when you're in any kind of production. And if you're not capable of doing that, and the only thing that you've got going for you is the fact that you were on a reality show, well, you're not going to get very far. Now, I think Clayton's very talented, and he's going to land a lot of good roles. But my advice, brother, do it the old-fashioned way. Don't try to take any shortcuts. Nothing ever works out for you in life if you try to take the shortcuts. This is Kevin Barbaro. We're listening to Coffee Talk 3.0 here on TalkingAlternative.com. I'll be right back with you. You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Bonjour, this is Dominique de Kock.
Bonjour, c'est Tamara Zuboff.
Bonjour, c'est Asania Kone.
We are hosting Pardon My French, New York City.
Our guests come from all over the world.
From Mali to New Caledonia, from Paris to Quebec.
French is their common language, yet they all come from different cultures, backgrounds, or countries.
And their common desire is to make New York their home.
Listen to them share their stories.
Join us at Pardon My French, New York City every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
TalkingAlternative.com.
We'll
Welcome back, everyone. This is Kevin Barbro. You're listening to Coffee Talk 3.0 here on TalkingAlternative.com. You can check out the podcast tonight at coffeetalk.podomatic.com. That's coffeetalk.podomatic.com. You'll be able to check out tonight's and the previous episodes as they are all archived there. Now, later in today's show, at about 2:25 today, I'm going to have my buddy Josh Caldwell is going to be calling in. Now, Josh is a writer and a director. He is actually an MTV Movie Award winner, okay? And he's got a new film, a new feature film coming out. He's actually put together a trilogy, three films, and the trilogy collectively is called LAX, as an LAX airport. With each movie of the trilogy starting with each individual letter. So right now, the L just came out. It's a movie called Layover. We're going to talk about that, which it was a nominee at the Seattle International Film Festival. And now he has a new crowdfunding project that's going on right now to help fund the A, which is a movie called Assassins. And then the final part of the trilogy will come out, I guess, in another year or so. He'll let us know when that's going to come out. But it's just called X. But basically, it's like X'd, you know. And so he's going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, he's actually been able to make an Layover is an incredibly good film, actually. And we're going to talk about it. It's actually in French with English subtitles, but it takes place in Los Angeles at night. And a very, very interesting way to do a movie. And I'm excited to talk with him about that. So he's going to be on here for the second half of the show. But until then, I wanted to talk a little bit about the couple of things that have happened this week. A of all, as we talked about last week, I filmed another commercial after I left here, and it was so it's my sixth TV commercial that I filmed in 6 weeks, and I actually filmed it did I film it the day after? I filmed it on Tuesday last week. So we did the show on Monday, and I filmed it on Tuesday, and it was actually filmed in New Jersey, okay? So this was interesting. They told me, I didn't know even going in what it was for, okay? And a lot of times that's how it works. You have no idea really what the commercial's about. They just know where to show up and what your wardrobe needs to be and et cetera. So they told me, hey, it's going to be an outdoor scene. It's going to be at a park. Show up casual. Okay, so I'm like, all right, that's cool, casual. So I head in. Now, as we've spoken about before, the commercial that I filmed before that 2 weeks ago was a shaving commercial, and I had to shave my face clean for the first time in like, a year, more than a year, really. And so I'm kind of growing that back, and they said casual, so I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to go unshaven because I've been growing this out. And when I get there, if they don't like it that casual, okay, then I can trim it up. You know what I mean? And there's got to be somewhere nearby that I can shave. So I brought my shaving kit with me, and I head over. So I get there, and I've actually worked with this production company before to do one of this stretch of six commercials. One of them was also with this same exact production company. So I get there, and it's the same production assistant, and so she's like, hey, listen, so I was like, you said casual, I can do the goatee, I can do whatever. They said, well, why don't you shave it into the goatee? I'm like, thank you, because I'm trying to grow the goatee back, you know. So this is how my life works. My friends will tell you, dude, I am the luckiest and at the same time, oddly, the most unlucky person that you'll find. My life is so extreme like that, you know. It's crazy. So anyway, I'm like going to there's a thing there at the park. There's a bathroom at the park, you know. So I'm gonna go in. I'm gonna shave. I get in there, no mirror, and of course, this is how my life works. So why would there be a mirror? Really? I mean, why should I expect that there would be a mirror? So then I'm like, well, she said I had a few minutes. I'll just jump in my car. I'll find a Dunkin' Donuts. I mean, it's New York, man, right? Anywhere else in the metropolitan New York City area, there is a Dunkin' Donuts. There's so many Dunkin' Donuts that I can be standing out front of a Dunkin' Donuts, and I can see the next available Dunkin' Donuts from where I'm standing. That's how frequent they are. And if it's not that, it's a McDonald's or a Burger King or something. I'm telling you, every turn I took, there's nothing but warehouses or houses. You know what I mean? To the point where I literally feel as though it's that the universe is having a joke with me right now, and I'm a mouse in a maze, and I'm searching for a piece of cheese. That piece of cheese is anywhere that I can shave my face, right? So finally, off in the distance, I see this McDonald's. And of course, anybody that's driven in New Jersey knows how life works over there. You don't make left-hand turns, okay? In New Jersey, you make right-hand turns so that you can get to the left-hand side of the highway, right? So you have to use the U-turns. So I see McDonald's over on the side. All right, I'll do it. I get off, work my way over there, finally. I'm telling you, it's like 10 minutes I've been driving around. Get in there, starting to set up, you know, it's McDonald's, so you say, you know, it's not the cleanest of bathrooms, you know what I mean? But at least there's a sink with an adjustable spigot, not one that just starts when you put your hand under it, you know what I mean? So I'm like, all right, it's a plus, you know? The minute that I start to put everything in there, all of a sudden the door opens up and five construction guys walk in. With just, you know, oil and grease on their hands, and they all need to wash up so they can eat. And once again, it's like, and why wouldn't you guys come here right now? Why would you not come here exactly at this moment so that I can stand here and watch you guys one by one wash your hands? And it's almost like I know that these guys couldn't care less about me, but as I'm standing there and visibly frustrated because I just need to shave, man. You know what I mean? I just need to shave. It's like, oh, let me clean my fingernails out because, like, I can't do that at any other time. You know what I'm saying? So, anyway, finally, I end up shaving. I go back, and the entire commercial, it took me 5 minutes, you know. And it was a good chunk of change for 5 minutes. It's worth the frustration. But that's how my life is, man. I'm so lucky, and I'm so unlucky at the same time. It's just a joke. But the other amazing thing that happened this week, and Sam and I, you were talking about it, and I were talking about this before the show started. I don't know where this is going to go, and I don't even want to say the name of the syndication network. I don't want to throw that out there because I don't count my eggs before they're hatched. I count my chickens before they're hatched. So, but this week, randomly on Facebook, I get an email from somebody, and he said, "Hey, listen, I listened to Coffee Talk, your podcast. I listened to the whole season so far, and I love it. I don't have anything to do with acting, but I found myself burning an hour really quickly listening to it. It was engaging. It was endearing. Give me a call because I work for a national radio syndication network, and we are looking for new talent. So." I'm like, I'll get back with the dude, you know what I mean? So I call the guy up, and he's like, yeah, listen, the deal is they have spots open on their weekend lineup. They're in over 100 markets, upwards of 125 markets and radio stations across the country, majority of which are AM stations, but some of them are FM stations as well. And so they're like, he's like, you know, we're interested in making you one of our new syndicated national radio shows. And I'm just like, how the heck do you even land on me, man? You know what I mean? Like, I was so amazed. And apparently, you know, the first guy that I talked to, the deal with him is that his job within the national syndication is actually managing the talent. His job is to go out and to seek out. And I guess all the guy does is listen to different radio shows and listen to different podcasts around the country and look for people that would be the type of shows that they want to have on a national syndication. And he landed on Coffee Talk on my podcast and was like, you know, they loved it. So anyway, fast forward, I have to talk with the manager of the syndication network. He says the same things and, you know, explain to me how it works and everything else. Now, I don't know all the intricacies about it. I don't know how everything, but basically what he was saying is, I wouldn't be talking to you if this wasn't a situation where we can both make a lot of money and then we can get you out there. And, you know, and because I was explaining to him, he wanted me to tell him about my life. So I gave him the whole spiel. You know, I told him how I was a coach, things went belly up, you know, need to do something. And radio is something I do on the side and just have always loved it, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, basically he was like, listen, man, you know, this could be a situation where you have a show one day a week, you know, for, you know, 2-3 hours at a time, one day a week, and you'll be able to make enough money doing that because it'll be nationally syndicated, that you won't really even have to do anything else. You'll be able to just do this, and then you can completely just focus your time on, you know, because, you know, right now, as I've talked about before, you know, I've developed a screenplay for the movie that we're going to film in 2016, Green Mountain Boys. Okay. And I've taken the advice of some people that I trust in the industry, some directors, some producers that are like, hey, dude, this is an amazing story. You need to expand out. You need to make this into a novel and have the novel come out like a year before the movie comes out. So basically have the novel come out right when you're getting ready to go into production of the movie. And because, you know, post-production will take about a year, and they'll both feed off each other. So it would be amazing, dude. I mean, how cool would that be if, like, we roll in here to talkingalternative.com and boom, all of a sudden, in 1 week, we go from where we are, which is amazing, you know what I mean? And, you know, the number one performing arts podcast in New York City, top five in the world, right? If we went from this to all of a sudden, we're on 100 stations. You know what I mean? And live and expand the show to maybe 2 hours, maybe three, depending upon whatever. And I think it would be amazing. I know, Sam, I know you think it'd be amazing too. So anyway, stay tuned, man. We're gonna figure this out over the next couple of weeks here if it's going to happen. If it is going to happen, then the launch of the syndication of Coffee Talk would be probably late January, early February. That's what we're looking at. In any event, we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes. I'm going to have my guest on for the second half of the show, Josh Caldwell, who's the award-winning writer and director. And it's going to be a great conversation. We've got a lot to talk about with him. I'll be back in just a minute. This is Coffee Talk 3.0. You're listening to TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Kevin Barbro. You're listening to Coffee Talk 3.0 here on TalkingAlternative.com. You can check out the podcast tonight at coffeetalk.podomatic.com. And right now, as Sam just told me, we're live right now in like 10 different countries right now. It's a wide draw today for the show. I got my guest on who just called in from L.A. My buddy Joshua Caldwell. Josh Caldwell. Josh, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Living the dream, brother.
You know, there you go.
Yeah, that's
you
know. There's no other way to do it, right?
I know exactly.
Hey. Now I know you went to Fordham, but are you actually a native New Yorker, or did you just happen to go to Fordham?
I am not a native New Yorker. I'm originally from Seattle, and ended up at Fordham University in New York City. I went to the Lincoln Center campus, not the Bronx campus.
Oh, that's interesting.
However, my wife is a native New Yorker. She was born and raised in Rockland County, so I've got about half of the partnership here is home to New York.
And the better half, too, let's be honest. Exactly, man. Well, listen, I appreciate you calling in. I know it's 3 hours behind us here and lunchtime, basically, out in L.A. Are you actually in L.A. right now calling in?
I am, yeah, I am.
Okay, awesome. Well, listen, I want to talk about a few things here. And for the audience, in 2006, you won the MTV Movie Award for Best Student Film, and you basically, that's kind of really kickstarted your career here, and now you've got what you developed is a trilogy, LAX, that we
Correct.
Were talking about earlier, and with the first letter of each of those being the first letter in the name of the title of each movie, the first movie of which L, which is Layover. Just released now, but was an award. You were in the Seattle International Film Festival, where it was a nominee for one of the awards. And now this is a self-distributed film. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes, it's all. It's what we're calling direct distribution.
So okay.
We're skipping the middleman and we're going direct to consumer.
I like that, which goes directly back to your pocket. That's always nice.
Exactly.
And, I've been reading up a lot and watching a couple of the podcasts that you've done, about Layover and about the entire thing. What was stunning to me, and I think this is stunning to anybody that's listened in, was how you were able to make such an amazing film with such a small budget. Like, my mind is blown, to be honest with you, because as I'm reading this, hashtag mind blown is the only thing that's going through my head, because you filmed it for like $5,000 or $6,000.
Right. Exactly.
Dude, that's stunning to me. Now, of course, and obviously on this show, we have a lot of aspiring actors, writers, directors that listen into the show, listen into the podcast. I know that this answer would take much longer than the time that we have here on the show, but how is that even possible, honestly?
Well, I mean, there's several things. One, it's writing a movie that you know you can shoot for the resources you have. So it's something that I sort of talk about in terms of writing within your circle of resources and utilizing the materials that are available to you, whether that is talent, locations, props, settings, that whole thing. Like I say, you don't need to make something that's super low budget, and has people driving around in Hondas. If your circle of resources includes a cousin who owns a Ferrari dealership, then, and he's willing to loan you a Ferrari, then you suddenly have a Ferrari in your movie. And so it's really thinking about, it's really building a film out of the resources that you have available. So that's one thing, especially in terms of the writing and approaching it that way. The other thing is mainly that the tougher part is that I was only able to really do Layover the way I did with the certain level of quality that I think people have seen in it because of 14 years of do-it-yourself experience.
Right.
I've been making films in this way for a long time. I've never really had the budget to do it. Even when I had money, it was never enough to really do what I wanted. And what I just tried not to do was let that impact how I decided to shoot something. And so with Layover, it was really saying, I'm going to approach this film in the same way and shoot it no differently than I would if I had all the control in the world and all the money in the world. And you kind of have to just adjust yourself. If you wanted, I remember I was talking to somebody and they were talking about how when they were shooting, when Nolan was shooting this Dark Knight sequence in Chicago, they had lit up a lot of the buildings and they asked a lot of buildings to keep all the lights on and that whole thing. It's like, wow, when you have a lot of money to do that, you can take advantage of that. The no budget version is you just have to adjust your schedule to take advantage of when those lights are normally on.
Right.
And adjust how you shoot it to get if that's what you want. And so it's really about being flexible, and it's really about, you know, not being, you know, you have a lot of filmmakers that are like, there's the only way to do it. And it's just not true. There's a lot of different ways to do it. And a lot of it just comes from the experience of having done it both with money and without, and knowing what can you get away with and what can't you get away with, and whatever you can't get away with, how do you turn it into something that you can get away with?
Exactly. You know, I believe what you're saying 100%, because I've always said to people, one thing that I don't like is when people tell me that there's only one way to do something. I immediately dismiss them as being fanatical or
right.
irrational, because and the thing I always fire back with is the analogy I always use is, listen, man, 2 + 2 = 4, right? But 2 × 2 = 4. Two completely
right.
different methods of doing something, right? To arrive at the same
yep.
exact answer. So I never believe somebody when they say, and another thing I love when people tell me, and I bet you're the same way, I love it when people tell me it can't be done. Dude, I almost
exactly.
beg people to tell me it can't be done.
And it's like, to a certain degree, yeah. I mean, if you write like a massive alien invasion movie and you're not a guy that can do your own special effects and that whole thing, then yeah, like you can't do that on $6,000. But
right.
what I would say is, listen, if you want to spend the rest of your life trying to get that movie made and get $100 million to do it, that's fine. It will probably not happen.
Right.
What I would say is there a $10,000 version of that film?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, is there a version of that film? And that's what I've kind of talked about, like, you know, layover in a traditional, like going through a traditional method of doing this is at least a $250,000 film.
Right.
That's what any line producer would go through and say, ah, well, you got to pay for all these extras in the airport and like all this stuff. And my whole thing is like, why? You know, like, I'll just do it. And I'll do it in the same way I would if I had total control, because I'm comfortable in how I shoot. And I know I can shoot something that looks good and has some quality to it. But doesn't require the whole amount of control that would come from spending the money to acquire it.
Exactly. And I know that, okay, let me talk a little bit more about layover as a film itself, because what I found really interesting is the fact that you made a French language film with English subtitles about Los Angeles. Which to me, the entire concept, I find amazing. My first question is, dude, did you write this movie in English and then have it translated to French, or are you fluent in French and you wrote it that way?
I'm not fluent in French. I can't speak a word of it.
Nice.
And so it was written in English, and we had Carl E. Landler, who plays the motorcyclist in the film,
right,
was very, very generous and came on board beyond just being an actor. He actually did all the French translations of the film,
wow,
of the script, I'm sorry. And then he was also in the rehearsals and on set sort of listening to make sure that the French grammar and vocab and everything was correct. And that freed me up as a director to pay attention to the emotion and the performance and the rhythm and the cadence and whether it was being expressed independent of what was actually being said.
Yeah, that was one thing that I was curious about, because my agent, who is also a film producer and a director, et cetera, last year he was asked to direct a film, a French film. Actually, in France, he was asked to go to France and he was curious. He was trying to get advice on whether or not he should do it. And my first question to him was, "How are you going to know if the way that they're speaking is just their dialect, or if they're just really not very good actors?" You know, because you
right,
know, if it's in
right.
English, of course you're going to know if it's conversational. It'll sound conversational in English. How do you know if it's conversational in a language you don't speak? And so that was what I was going to add. So basically, that was his role on the set, was making sure that it was conversational within the dialect of French that they're speaking. And then you could pay attention to everything else, basically.
Exactly. And that's all the stuff that I pay attention to anyway. I tend to not harp on whether, you know, what the dialogue is said in the exact way that it's written. You know, to me, it's like I'm forgiving of that as long as there's some kind of truth and honesty and emotion behind it. versus whether the stuff is empty, but, you know, the dialogue's correct. And so in a way, I got to just skip and not deal with the thing that I tend to not pay too much attention to anyway and let somebody else handle it. So I like to say when we go to premieres, especially when we premiere in front of people that speak French, I like to just say, if you guys find anything wrong with it, it's his fault.
Yeah, yeah. Pass the buck along. Yeah, that's great, man. Yeah, at least you got a fall guy, right?
Exactly.
And
but it was one of those things, speaking to it, it was one of those things where it was not this isn't a situation where it was made in France and it's a French film and then the you know, subtitles are just being set up in order for American audiences to just watch it. It was actually intended for American audiences. And there were those three levels of storytelling. There was the initial writing of the script, there was the French translation, and the reciting of those lines, and then there was the actual subtitles that were put in. And so there were three steps in order to tell the story. And it was very much intended for an American audience, to be experiencing this film, as opposed to, oh, it's just a foreign film that audiences happen to be seeing.
Right, yeah, and that was actually what the feeling that I got. And that's why I found it so intriguing. That was actually how I landed on wanting to get you on this show, other than the fact that you're somebody that I find to be like me, where, hey, hard work, be a good person, and you can achieve anything that you want. You're that kind of guy. You know, you're not going to sit around and wait for somebody. You're not going to sit around and wait for things to happen. You're going to make it happen, basically.
Yeah.
But you know, the whole thought of having an American film in French, intended for an American audience, filmed in America, I just found that what a great idea and what a great concept. And I honestly, I can't even think of a film that's like that, honestly, off the top of my head. So I think this is fairly cutting edge on what you did with just the entire concept. Now, we're going to have to cut to a commercial here real quick, but I wanted to talk with you when we come back about Assassin and just about movies in general in the last 15 minutes. So we'll be back here in just a minute on TalkingAlternative.com. This is Kevin Barbaro. You're listening to Coffee Talk 3.0.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Have you ever decided to reinvent yourself? Are you navigating a new life's journey? Are you an aspiring artist that's looking for direction? This is Kevin Barbaro, and my new show, Coffee Talk 3.0, is your new best friend. Tune in live to hear successful professional artists and their inspiring real-life adventures Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here at TalkingAlternative.com.
Bonjour, this is Dominique de Kock.
Bonjour, c'est Tamara Zuboff.
Bonjour, c'est Asania Kone.
We are hosting Pardon My French, New York City.
Our guests come from all over the world.
From Mali to New Caledonia, from Paris to Quebec.
French is a common language, yet they all come from different cultures, backgrounds or countries.
And their common desire is to make New York their home.
Listen to them share their stories.
Join us at Pardon My French, New York City every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening to Coffee Talk 3.0 on TalkingAlternative.com. Once again, check out the podcast tonight at coffeetalk.podomatic.com. We're on the phone right now with our buddy Josh Caldwell, who, as we were speaking before the break, we were talking about your film, Layover, and layoverfilm.com is where you can go to either rent or download the movie, correct?
Correct. And, you know, as a special for your listeners, I'm going to offer up a coupon code.
Oh.
So if you use the code CoffeeTalk, all one word, you get $1 off the do-it-yourself bundle, which includes an interview with myself, some behind-the-scenes making-ofs in terms of how we accomplish some of the scenes, commentary, the script, the whole nine yards. So it's a really great deal. You get $1 off. Just use CoffeeTalk and enter the promo code CoffeeTalk when you're checking out.
Dude, that's awesome, man. You're the man, brother. I like
it.
Sure. All right, that's great, man. So now I want to fast forward a little bit because I want to talk about Assassin, the second movie in the trilogy, which I did see there's a crowdfunding site for it now, and I do understand. You know, we talked earlier about doing Layover, doing it for being able to make such an amazing movie for a small amount of money. Now this movie, Assassin, Now, would you categorize it as an action movie or a movie that has action in it?
I think it's a thriller that has action in it.
Okay, yeah.
So it's much more about, you know, suspense than it is about, you know, although there's a number of fight scenes and gunfights and all that fun stuff, but it really is much more of a thriller than it would be an action film.
Okay, gotcha. And now, but because just by nature, when you have action, and of course you need a stunt coordinator, and there's a lot of things that go into that with insurance and everything else, then of course it's going to be more expensive than making Layover. I mean, that's just something that by nature of the film, then that's what's going to happen. So you started a new crowdfunding for it, and I found this style of crowdfunding to be very unique. I'd never heard of this company before. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So we decided to run our crowdfunding through Seed and Spark, which is a really sort of innovative, young, up-and-coming crowdfunding company founded by an awesome, awesome woman named Emily Best, who basically decided to create both a crowdfunding and distribution platform together. And also, in terms of the crowdfunding, has created something that reflects much more of a like a wedding registry than it does just straight rewards. So you have your reward tiers, right? Like $200 gets you a phone call with me or whatever you want. But then you can also, we've listed a number of the things we need: camera, stunt coordinators, meals, you know, fees for certain people. And you can buy into that in segments. And so you can really, you know, you can be very specific about what you want your money to go to, and you can also see where it's going to, as opposed to these general reward systems. And so it's really different. It's really innovative. They have a very, very strong success rate. And one of the things, it just appealed to me in terms of, you know, Emily's message to filmmakers, which is, how do you find a way to be profitable and work in the indie space, which is a big message of mine and much more than I can really get into now. But
right.
The idea of making films for a responsible budget that you are going to be able to, you know, pay back your investors on. And so her whole approach to indie filmmaking and raising the funds for it really fits into what we're looking for, and we thought that it would be a very, you know, an ideal partnership.
And now talk about the movie itself. It is, and I read an article that you had written about it, or an article that was written about it. I don't necessarily remember if it was written by you, but basically, it's about a woman, and why don't you go into it? Because I know that there is an underlying LGBT aspect to the movie itself.
Yeah, exactly. So the story is about a woman named Jane who's a contract killer, and she has a job that goes wrong, and she goes and hides out in the San Bernardino Mountains, where while hiding out, she meets and falls in love with a local woman named Ella. And as the two grow closer in the relationship, the baggage of their past lives, in the case of Jane, you know, the people whose job it went wrong for, in terms of Ella, it's her ex-girlfriend who's abusive, threatens the future of their relationship.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, for us, in terms of the LGBT or LGBTQ storyline, the interest in making this film was about taking what is a story that's conventionally about a man and a woman, you know, the male hitman falls
right.
in love with the woman, something we've seen 1,000 times before,
or more,
a much
yeah.
more traditional and conventional story.
Yeah, right.
And create a film that is a term that we've been using, which is essentially post-gay. in that the film is not about sexual identity. It's not about sexual discovery. It's about two characters who happen to be gay.
Yeah.
But their sexual identity is irrelevant to the storyline. Much in the same way, the sexual identity of a man and a woman is irrelevant to the storyline.
Exactly. Dude, that's one thing that was basically the gist that I got of it. And, dude, I love that idea because I was thinking about, you know what, for over 20 years, I was a college coach, okay? So I was immersed in the world of athletics. And I primarily coached women, okay? And I always found it interesting when I would run into people that would say something along the lines of, well, she throws really well for a girl. And I always thought to myself, well, why do you have to say that? Why can't you just say that she throws really well? And there's an author, Christine Brenneman, who writes for USA Today. She's a big thing. Why is it the NCAA basketball tournament? It's the NCAA basketball tournament, which means men, and then there's the NCAA women's basketball tournament. Why do you have to say that it's the – why can't they both just be the NCAA tournament? So when I was with your film, it's like I love the fact that it's like this is a movie about two characters. It's not a movie about two gay characters that are in an action film. It's an action film, and they just happen to be gay. You know,
exactly.
Why does it have to be a big deal? You know, and so I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's looking to, you know, it's the kind of movie that I think we're going to start to see more and more of. And it was, you know, a desire to find ways of including characters that are diverse, but they're not, their roles are not about the diversity. You know, it's having a trans, you know, it's having a female character like in Layover, where it's kind of irrelevant that she's a female. Like, that's not the point of the film.
Exactly.
You know, it's having, like, in Assassin, it's having, you know, it's doing a lesbian character, you know, who just is a lesbian. That's just the way she is. But we never bring it up. She's never, I don't know, you know, I'm not out yet, you know, or I'm not.
Right,
and
right.
That's fine. Those stories can be told, but that's kind of, you know, I feel like I wanted to approach it in a different way. And that seemed like an exciting way to go, to basically say, we're going to tell this story about these characters, and sort of the details of these characters are not going to be the point to the storyline.
Exactly.
The point of the storyline is the story.
Yeah.
And I think that in the future, you're going to see a lot more. You're going to see trans characters who are just playing somebody who is trans, but that's not the point of their storyline.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to sort of get ahead of the game here.
Yeah.
And we think that it's just a different approach. And for me, it's always about, it's the challenge of writing, you know, doing a movie all in French. Can I pull that off? Doing a film that's about, you know, two women who are connecting, two characters who are connecting in a real emotional way, and have it work. You know, that's the challenge to me. Can I make this really about their relationship and have everyone watching it connect to it, regardless of any kind of preconceived feelings on sexuality and that whole thing?
And it's basically the challenge for you is just to continue to cut your own path, which is actually what we were talking about earlier in the show, is really just doing, you know, taking chances, doing, living, being, etc. Okay, we got like 3 minutes left here, so I just want to ask you a couple more quick questions here. One thing that I did want to ask you, and I want you to rank, okay, in terms of importance, okay? When you're making a film, that you want the film to be both artistically, you want it to be artistic, and yet you want it to be commercially viable at the same time. I'm going to give you four things. You tell me in rank order what's the most important, okay? Budget, star power, meaning you got a named actor or actress in it, the actual script, so the story itself, or the production value. How would you rank those in terms of making something that's both artistically and commercially viable?
I would say it's definitely script is number one for me. I would say talent would be number two. And it's less to me name power, and it's more just solid talent.
Great, you know, actors,
name,
right?
Help the commercial. That's still a part that we can't get away from yet, but that's important. And then I would say production value, and then I would say budget, because you can get a lot of production value for very little budget. And people harp on the budget all the time, and clearly I've shown that, you know, I'm able to pull things off for much more than I have available to me.
Exactly. And that was basically, I kind of figured that's right along what I think too. I do think that I think the story is the most important thing. Write a great story.
Oh, yeah.
Get great actors, okay, whether they're named or not, get great actors. And then the production, make sure the production value is high, and the budget, it'll sort itself out. You can work it out. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
so
exactly.
Now the other thing is, real quickly, and it's the last thought before we have to leave, but it seemed to me you were using the same actress for Assassin that you were using in Layover. Is that correct?
She plays, Maren plays a smaller role in Layover. She plays Danielle, who's like the friend of the friend that speaks French.
Okay, so she...
And the idea was, yeah, and Carl, who plays the motorcyclist, has a role in Assassin as well. And the idea was to, as much as we could, sort of utilize the people that we're working with, because that's, for me, there's importance in that, and being able to, you know, that's how I feel like I've been able to get some really great performances, because I've worked with these people a number of times, and I know how to work with them, basically.
And you trust me. Well,
yeah,
listen,
exactly.
Hey,
exactly.
Josh, listen, man, thank you so much. I appreciate you offering up the discount. If people use Coffee Talk, I'm going to put it on Facebook and whatnot. But I really appreciate you calling in today to Coffee Talk. And, best of luck in the future here with the crowdfunding on Assassins, and also as you move on to X.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
But, dude, our paths will cross, my friend. They will in the future. Okay, brother?
That's good.
All right, man.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hey, listen, everybody. That wraps up here another episode of Coffee Talk 3.0. Check out the podcast tonight at coffeetalk.podomatic.com. You're listening to us live here every Monday from 2 to 3 p.m. on talkingalternative.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Have you ever decided to reinvent yourself? Are you navigating a new life's journey? Are you an aspiring artist that's looking for direction? This is Kevin Barbaro, and my new show, Coffee Talk 3.0, is your new best friend. Tune in live to hear successful professional artists and their inspiring real-life adventures Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, @MontyTaylor.com.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.